Every day, in many places around the globe, Facebook has to make difficult and sometimes hugely consequential decisions about what images and posts can stay on its platform and what gets taken down. The company says it does not want to make those decisions alone anymore and is testing out a new idea to moderate content. The World's Lydia Emanuelidou reports.
A few years ago, Norwegian writer Tom Egeland logged onto his Facebook page and posted a photo
of the so-called Napalm Girl.
Napalm Girl, as it's widely known, is one of the most iconic images captured during the Vietnam War. In it, a young girl, naked, tears in her eyes, screams in pain as she flees a napalm bomb attack. In 2016, Egeland posted the image to his Facebook page, along with several other photos that he felt had changed the history of warfare. Within hours, Facebook took it down and kicked him off the platform. It said the photo violated its rules on nudity and that, in some countries, the photo might even qualify as child pornography.
I was definitely surprised and upset because this is an iconic photograph which has nothing to do with nudity or child pornography. It is a historic photograph.
When Norwegian media picked up the story and posted about it on Facebook, they too were censored for uploading the image. Even Norway's prime minister had her post removed when she tried to chime in. To Egeland, Facebook was acting like a godlike super editor based in California, his words. When he reached out to the company to appeal, he got the same canned response from some nameless Facebook employee that his post had violated their rules.
You know, it felt pretty hopeless. It didn't really matter to me that I was banned. I can live without Facebook, but I felt, you know, fighting a system where nobody listened.
Eventually, Facebook did listen. After a wave of media attention and a global protest by users, the company reversed its decision. It acknowledged the historical importance of the image and the value of letting users share it. Facebook has to make decisions on posts like this one almost every single day. Many of them, though, don't start with well-meaning Norwegian writers, but with bad actors using the platform to cause harm. Last year, during a tense hearing on Capitol Hill, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg admitted that his company hadn't done enough to prevent that.
And that goes for fake news, for foreign interference in elections, and hate speech. We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was a big mistake. And it was my mistake, and I'm sorry.
Facebook recognizes the consequences the decisions it makes can have on people's safety, on democracy, on speech. And it says it doesn't want to make them alone anymore. So it's testing out an idea that some say will have the company operating more like a government than a private corporation. This idea started with Harvard Law professor Noah Feldman. It came to him while he was visiting California last year.
I went for a long bike ride up in the hills behind Palo Alto, and it suddenly occurred to me that Facebook could really benefit by borrowing the model that constitutional courts use.
He thought, what if there was some sort of independent body that users could turn to challenge Facebook's decisions, a panel that would advise Facebook on its policies? He took the idea straight to Facebook.
And I discovered, to my great interest, that Mark Zuckerberg had himself been thinking for a long time about different ways to devolve power, create accountability, put some kinds of decision making outside of the company.
A few months later, Zuckerberg debuted the idea on the Vox podcast, The Ezra Klein Show.
You can imagine even some sort of structure, almost like a Supreme Court or appeals board that is made up of independent folks who don't work for Facebook, who ultimately get to make the final judgment call on what should be acceptable speech in a community that reflects the social norms of and values of people all around the world.
Facebook wants to have this Supreme Court-like panel up and running by the end of this year. In the meantime, it's been doing its homework, consulting experts, holding input sessions and simulations all around the world to figure out what the board should look like and how it should work. It doesn't have all the details sorted out, but it's envisioning something like this. A 40-member panel, there'll be outsiders, not Facebook employees. They'll take on appeals from users who disagree with decisions made by Facebook. Using the company's community standards as a guide, the board will issue binding decisions on what should happen to whatever piece of content they're reviewing. This will be tricky work. The board will have to navigate vastly different cultural norms and regulatory environments. That's a challenge Facebook's Mackenzie Thomas says the company is embracing.
It's not like we have a governance system that governs the entire world, but Facebook has 2+ billion users. And it's a new genre, I guess, of governance that we're kind of stepping into. And I think that's what's most exciting about it.
Facebook knows that a 40-member board won't be able to address the concerns of all those 2+ billion users. So it'll have to be picky about the cases it does take up.
Hopefully they would be representative of larger issues that are plaguing content moderation today.
Myanmar is one example Thomas gave me. There, Facebook is accused of playing a role in the brutal violence against the Rohingya Muslim minority by allowing hate-filled posts and false information to run rampant on its platform. Facebook has since admitted that it didn't have enough people with the language skills and cultural understanding to deal with what was happening in Myanmar. Nicholas Suzor is concerned the oversight board will have similar issues. He teaches law at Queensland University of Technology in Australia.
One of the challenges that Facebook's facing here is how does it make sure that the people who are on the board are sufficiently cognizant of the cultural contexts and the power imbalances of the people whose cases will come before them. I think this is something that Facebook still needs to work through because ultimately you can't create a board that is sufficiently representative of the 2 billion people who use Facebook.
Facebook knows this. That's why the company says it's working on a roster of experts that the board can turn to for input on specific cultures and regions. They also want a regional representative present for deliberations. Suzor doesn't know how all of this will work, so he's a bit skeptical. But in general, he's optimistic because he thinks this will address one of the biggest problems in content moderation.
The decisions are made usually in secret by people that we don't know and we don't have any real visibility into that process.
When it makes a decision on a particular piece of content, the board will issue a written statement explaining its opinion. And if it recommends a change to Facebook's policies, the company will have to respond publicly in writing.
This is kind of a compromise situation. It's not like Facebook is giving up all of its power to make the rules. But holding it more accountable by having that conversation in public, that's a really crucial part of this puzzle that brings these discussions out into the open.
Suzor says this is just one step to hold the company accountable for what happens on its platform. But it's a good step. Tom Egeland, the Norwegian writer at the center of the Napalm Girl controversy, agrees. But he also wants Facebook to acknowledge that it's not just a tech company, but a media company. That's a label that would subject Facebook to actual oversight and regulation, and a label that the company has long, long resisted. For The World, I'm Lydia Manulidu in Boston.
And it might be a good time to mention that you can connect with us on Facebook. We're at The World.